chaos or processes? Tell us a little bit more about this, because I think this was kind of like, we're dealing with chaos all the time, but how can we kind of put that into more of a guided process?
So processes are something we drive home. 30 years of experience, it's really easy to always have processes because I'm in a 20 group. I think it's critical that everyone is in some sort of peer group sharpening themselves. But, our 20 group, they bring great ideas to the meetings. And I'm not a genius. If they come up with something great, I'm going to listen and implement.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to this episode of the Dealership Fix It podcast. I am your host. My name is Jacob Berry, and I am here today with AJ Measle. She is the general manager of Plano Kawasaki Suzuki and just a wonderful, wonderful operator. And I thought I'd bring her on today to talk about some employee retention, hiring, training, and just overall having a really, really great team around you. So, hi, AJ. Welcome to the Dealership Fix It podcast.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. So thank you for coming on. I've been watching some of your stuff that you've been posting. Very inspirational, very, thought-provoking, right? How do some of these operators in our space kind of handle the two-legged expense, being the employee walking around your dealership, doing or sometimes not doing the things that we pay them to do? So you've got a really, really awesome outlook on how you manage your staff, how you train them. And I thought that today we would kind of just go over some of those thought processes. But before we do that, I always like to start out each show with just kind of telling us a little bit about your experience and where you got started, some of the positions that you've held within the power sports dealership that you're at, and other places if there was, and just kind of where you're at now.
Well, I don't have a very interesting story. A little over 30 years ago, I was going to school for design. So I thought I wanted to be a designer. And I've been riding motorcycles over 40 years now. So I was in a motorcycle dealership looking at motorcycles and ran across a dealer principal that, we just had a great conversation. And he and his wife kind of pursued me to come on board 30 years ago to be F&I. And back then, F&I was kind of a new thing for power sports. It was kind of a new item. We didn't really have F&I departments like we do now. That found money department was a new topic all the way back then. They offered me a job. I politely declined. I thought I was going to be a designer. I was going to college. And I blurted out a stupid income that was way low and said, well, you would have to pay me this. And they said, done. And I ended up going to work for the dealership. And after a year of doing that, I quickly realized that this was really my passion. I was doing what I loved. It was exciting. We were working, 11, 12 hour days, 6 days a week. And that's just the way it was in our industry back then. Fast forward, I worked for that dealer for 6 years and came to Plano Kawasaki Suzuki and have been running the dealership here ever since. And that has been my passion, for sure is running and operating a dealership. We were, nine, including me, strong. And now we have 20 employees. We've had sister stores, so we've had multiple locations in the past, but, back down to the one, the simplicity of just having one dealership is really at this age in the game for me, where my heart is. And, so my thought process is just, take your one thing that you're good at and really be excellent and exemplary. And so here I am still passionate every day. I don't work 6 days a week now. I only work five, which is awesome to have 2 days off in a row. We started closing on Mondays during COVID and that has stuck and it's created a better quality of life for the staff also. And quality of life is really what we start talking about when we talk about people being our best asset, our biggest asset. Really, you can get these machines and everyone has the same machines. But what you have under your roof is really the environment, the people. And it starts from the top for sure is how do you wake up every day and keep yourself motivated and then encourage your team to be motivated every day too.
That's awesome. Yeah. Before we get into some of the employee stuff, tell me a little bit more about the dealership that you're at now. Cause I always thought you were at Plano Kawasaki since the beginning, but you were at one for 6 years before that.
Yeah, so I worked for Al-Am's Dallas Honda in Dallas.
Okay.
Just right up the road from us. We're all still good friends. But that dealership, it was time for me to move forward. And so I made that lateral that move to come here. We're about 15 minutes away. So still a Metroplex dealer.
And you went right from the finance manager position over there to general manager at Kawasaki Suzuki, Plano Kawasaki Suzuki.
Yes, and that's kind of a funny story. So when you're in a dealership that's only got nine people, let's face it, you're a general manager, you're F&I, you're cleaning bikes, you're making them ready, you're pushing them in and out every day, you're cleaning the bathrooms, you're making the coffee. So we really, in a small dealership, you're selling the parts, you're doing it all. And so, I think that general manager it's just a title sometimes, but it really means that we're the first person to pick up the trash and clean the toilets.
Yep, you get the keys to lock up at night, right?
Yeah, it's really kind of a I don't even have a title on my business card because I think it's really not that important. The important thing is that the jobs are getting done.
Yeah, for sure. Now you're also an enthusiast too. You were telling me a little bit about what you ride. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? And you went from one bike to another, and you're on your second one now.
Yeah, so obviously sport bikes are still really where my heart is, and I've had everything, literally every type of sport bike that we've sold. Aprilia, Kawasaki, Suzuki, Ducatis, I mean, you name it. I currently ride a ZX14. I'm on my second ZX14. That platform to me really fits my style of, longer distance sport riding. I had an H2 in between, but went back to the ZX14. 636 is my track bike. But I have a collection of Vespas, so that's my alter ego. I really enjoy scooters, and Vespas are kind of where my heartstrings get pulled. So I have one from a Mary Kay pink with a Louis Vuitton seat, and then I have one that looks like Japanese tattoos. So I have kind of an alter ego on my scooter choices. They're all high performance, so there's not a one of them that's stock, because I still want performance and demand that. And then my touring scooter is a Vespa GTS 300.
I love that. I think I've seen on your LinkedIn profile you're sitting
Yes.
on your pink one, right? On your pink
Yes,
Vespa.
with my cowboy
Yes.
hat. Yes, that is
Yep.
totally me.
I
Texas
love that.
cattle on the pink scooter.
I love that. And how are you still visiting the track and racing and competing, or is it just for fun these days?
Yeah, I didn't ever really race. I can't say that track riding is really something I did to do other than to work on my skill set. I think that's an important thing. I've learned as I've aged that I'm not as quick as I used to be. And so, like any muscle, you need to keep it sharp, right? You know, we go to the gym to keep our muscles in shape. And I think for motorcycling, there's a pain penalty that's pretty high, right? So, track riding is just something I've done just for fun.
I love that. I love that. It's so cool. Well, certainly a wide, expansive history that you've had in this industry, not only as an enthusiast, but also an employee wearing multiple hats. I love it. So let's talk a little bit about why we brought you on today, and that's to talk about the employees and how you manage that. You've got a lot of great content that you put out there. And the one thing that I wanted to start off with was what you talked about at AIM this past month.
Yeah.
So at the time of this recording, it's the end of February here. We had AIM earlier in the month. You came and you gave such an awesome presentation there about the 10 common sense touch points.
Right.
So could you help us just kind of understand a little bit more and share about some of those 10 points that maybe missed it at AIM, but they can kind of listen to this podcast and we can dive into each one?
Yeah, for sure. And we that got posted on Motorcycle Power Sports News, so that article's out there. It's also on LinkedIn, but I would love to share that. Is it's really I think the only thing that differentiates us between other dealers. Again, what is it that we do under the roof versus, everyone else? And it's identifying what we need and what the employees' needs are. And so one of the number one things that we always hear when we're doing interviews is, we ask, why did you leave? Right? What was the toxic environment? That's the number one thing we hear. And so that starts with the touch point number one is how do you create an environment that's not toxic? And it starts with leadership down, honestly. But it's also identifying if you have toxic employees that could be causing some harm, you need to be paying attention to that and get ahead of that, right? No one wants to work around other people that are not doing their best. Everyone thrives in an environment where everyone is exemplary. That's how, they say, soar with the eagles, or fly with the turkeys. Well, we want to definitely be an eagle, for sure. So, identifying your toxic people and definitely trying to change that culture would be number one. And then number two is, really identifying your leadership. So identify, are you empowering people to make decisions? and giving them the tools that they need to make those decisions, and then making sure that those people are doing that, you know?
Can I ask about point one real quick?
Yeah, for sure.
So I agree with you. We can't have toxic environments with employees, but I'm sure if any other operator or manager type position is listening to this and they're going, yeah, well, we got Johnny over here and he sells, 25 bikes a month, but he's kind of not great to all the other employees. Maybe he's creating a toxic environment, but he's a performer. I mean, how do you address some situations like that?
For a power sports dealer, there are a lot of moving parts that have a direct impact on your income. That's why Moto Hunt Premium was developed. Designed specifically for dealers, Moto Hunt Premium allows you to quickly and easily manage your inventory. With streamlined pricing data from competitive dealership listings, JD Power Pricing Guide, and National Power Sport Auction wholesale prices, Moto Hunt Premium also automatically identifies potential issues with your online listings to help you move your aging inventory and maximize your gross profits. Contact us today to take a test ride of the all-new Moto Hunt Premium and see how we can help your business grow and sell more inventory.
There you have that coaching, that leadership. So first, we try to mentor that, right? Is this person, can they be mentored? Can they try to grow? Can you get them to see that a different way or a different delivery might be better? But just like every great sports team out there, they've had toxic players that they've had to cut because the locker room experience was bad. And I think that sets a precedent sometimes to let someone go that was a high performer, but they got let go. I wouldn't want to say that that's a threat, but it certainly sets a precedence that everyone's mental health is important, not just one's, right? Not just one guy is more important than the other. Because when you don't let go of that toxic person, you're essentially saying that this person is better than everyone else on the team. Is that setting a good precedence? No, it's not. And so everyone is important. And so sometimes you've got to make tough calls. I've had it happen before, where we lost a toxic team member that had been here for a very long time. And what I learned was the rest of the team stepped up. They stepped up once the other person was away. So that toxic person was dwarfing their ability to grow.
That's a great point. That's a great point. Yeah. And so how many people were in that team that had to kind of pick up the slack from this one top performer?
Yeah, four. And
Four.
it really changed their outlook and their view, their sort of pep in their step changed, their desire to want to grow and learn because maybe they felt like they were being held back or judged by this person, right? And then once that person's gone, then they got to grow and they got to get the sunlight. So sometimes we got to think outside the box.
For sure. Very important. Very important. So you set the precedence. Here's the kind of environment that we want to promote and have our people live within. We've got number two, be a leader, not a boss. Tell us a little bit about that one.
Leadership is absolutely just what it sounds like. You're leading, which means that you are not, a boss is going to tell someone what to do. We all know that. Nobody really wants a boss. Everyone wants someone that's going to be in the trenches with them, have their back. And leadership means that you are taking the lead, but you're bringing people along with you. You're impacting them by looking at what their best traits are and encouraging that. And that doesn't mean we're enabling it. It means that we're standing alongside, walking hand in hand, so to speak, to get the job done. And we're there for them. We have their back like JanSport, right? It's 100%, serving yourself last. We lead with a servant leadership approach. So that would mean that, we want to make sure that our team is healthy first, and then we make sure we take care of ourselves also. So.
I like that. What comes to memory is a meme that I've seen talking about the two differences between a leader and a boss. And I think it's like a, an old Egyptian, type drawing. And you've got the guy in the front helping all these other people pulling the stone, and that's the leader. And then you got the guy, the other meme is the guy in the back, kind of cracking the whip on his people. That's the boss, right? So you're more of a, let's pull this whole thing together. Let's move
Right.
forward. Okay, I love
Right.
that. I love that.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay, so number three, mission statement.
Mission.
And we've heard of these come in a couple different types of names, core principles, fundamentals, right? Tell us a little bit about the mission statement, and maybe can you share some of the ones that you have for your store?
Yes, that'd be great. That's easy. So I think that you need to have a mission statement. So I think a lot of people forget that we can't reach a goal that we don't put out there, right? And the goal would be your mission statement. So yeah, you can call it whatever you want to. Our mission statement is the golden rule. And the golden rule for every religion even has a golden rule. But it all essentially means the same thing. We do unto others as we do for ourselves. So we care for others as we would care for ourselves. And essentially, for us, that means that we're going to care for our customers and our employees equally. Everyone needs care. So it's that empathic way or that compassion way of delivering whatever you've got to deliver. So if you would want someone to lie to you and that's how you want to be treated, well, obviously you're not going to fit our mission statement. But treat everyone with dignity, respect, civility, and then, nobody wants to be mistreated. If you ask anyone, do you want to be lied to? They're emphatically going to say no way.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of we have in sales or people already lack trust in salespeople, right? And it's getting past that. And so we just have to humbly walk in humility and kind of bring a different delivery or a different approach to knock down those walls. And ours is the golden rule. But have a mission statement and know what your mission statement is. And does everyone else know the mission statement? So is everyone else on board on the same team?
I love that. There's a couple of general managers that I talk to. They'll do a printout, like a business card sized mission statement that they have the employees carry with them. And they'll pull it out in their meetings. And sometimes they'll just cover it on a weekly basis just so that it's fresh and in everybody's head all the time. I love that. That's so cool.
Well, those are really good leaders that are doing that.
Yeah. They're making sure they hammer that mission statement. Like this is not a voluntary thing, guys. This is how we're going to operate, right? Okay, cool. So number four, chaos or processes. Now you've got a lot to say this in your article, and you said a lot about it in the AIM Expo. What? Tell us a little bit more about this, because I think this was kind of like, we're dealing with chaos all the time, but how can we kind of put that into more of a guided process?
So I think processes is one of the key ways that we lose money. If you don't have a process in place, it's going to cost you no matter what. And so the identifier is you want to have a clear process up front. And then if you don't have a process, you've got chaos. So processes are something we drive home. 30 years of experience, it's really easy to always have processes because I'm in a 20 group. I think it's critical that everyone is in some sort of peer group, sharpening themselves. But our 20 group, they bring great ideas to the meetings. And I'm not a genius. If they come up with something great, I'm going to listen and implement it. Hey, can you share that doc with me? I want that, and I'm going to use it for the store. I think that having processes in place, though, is everyone is speaking the same language, right? We are all delivering the same message to the customer, whether one person is off and the other person has to step in, or whether it's a manager, reconciling a conflict with a customer that the employee, had a problem with. Let's say that happens. The employee's saying the same thing as whoever the manager is. Now the customer has a solid process that they've heard the same thing multiple times. It hasn't changed. So that helps when we talk about processes. But the one thing that people do not do well in is chaos. Leaders can deal with chaos very well. We're adaptive to it, right? Chaos, we almost thrive in it. Like the more chaos that happens, the more problem solving we have, and our brains almost function better, right? So when you have employees, though, they're not used to making those problem decisions all the time, like problem, solution, problem, solution. They're used to someone else doing it for them. When they're in a chaotic environment, it creates burnout, and that is not what you want. People thrive in a lack of chaos, and they fail in chaos most of the time. And so unless you're just wired for chaos, like you work in the ER, that's not most people, right? And so I think that part is really important.
You mentioned that you're very much an advocate of the 20 groups, and you're always intaking ideas from the ideas that are passed around in these groups. What would you say is just an example, the last thing that maybe you heard in a 20 group and go, "Ooh, that sounds really good," and have implemented in your store? Would you be willing to share that?
I come home with a list. I have a notebook that I take to every meeting, and I literally have a list, and it would probably be hard for me to differentiate what's going to be probably the best idea. But to me, when we talk about best ideas, it's get yourself in a 20 group, listen to podcasts, listen to what everyone, yes, exactly. Listening to your podcast is great. I was actually listening to one of your podcasts this morning on my drive in.
Thank you.
You're welcome. But I think that just constantly growing and listening to the ideas, let's face it, things are changing quickly right now. And we have to know ahead of time the shift in business. We need to know ahead of time who's doing what. Because if we wait 90 days, that's too late, right? We keep our ears perked up at 30 days that we, you know, have a shift in business. 60 days, we need to be implementing a plan. And by 90 days, that plan needs to be in action. And so I know that really didn't answer your question, but I really feel like listening to podcasts and really diving into getting in a 20 group if you're not already is a key.
There's, I think what you're saying is there's just too much information out there to kind of talk about one point. Start getting involved and see what kind of hits your nerves, right? Like, oh, I have a problem with that, and this person's talking about it. Maybe I'll try what they offer, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. I like it. All right, so back on task here. We're at number five. The little things matter. What's that about?
Yeah. It really is the little things that matter to people the most. It's not, you know, hey, I got the biggest paycheck in the industry. I mean, there are people that are wired that way, and that's really good for them. But that's not the majority. And so really identifying and listening to what it is that their needs are. So like, for instance, we're paying attention. I literally just last week finished 20 employee reviews. And my reviews are a series of asking 15 questions. And then I give them four items of feedback. But listening to them, what are their needs? What are their goals? What are they struggling with? It's just a matter of asking questions and listening well. And then are we doing the little things to help them? You know, maybe one guy is having a tough time at home and he needs to have a Saturday off. And it's season. Figure it out. You know, give that guy a Saturday off every once in a while. Maybe another guy is lonely. He doesn't have someone at home and he just wants to work all the time. Great. Let him work as much as he wants to. Let him take his laptop home. Maybe it's, you know, he has a special hobby that he has, like hunting or fishing, and you ask questions about that. Maybe they lost a pet and they're really struggling with that and they need time to grieve. I wrote about that in our article because I feel like sometimes we overlook things to us that might not be important or significant, but they may be to the employee. So are we paying attention to that? And that's kind of what I mean by little things, is just really stop to pause and pay attention to each employee's needs individually. It's challenging to do, you know, when you have multiple dealerships, and I know because obviously we've been there before. But if you can't do it, press on your team, your leadership, to go out there and ask these questions and make these changes and listen to the small things. You know, we remember birthdays and we get cookie delivery for each person's birthday. Little things.
I love that. And I'm sure you're getting a great, you know, feedback from that, right? They're really appreciative of that. I don't think a lot of businesses are doing that these days, especially some of the bigger ones, right? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe some of the smaller dealerships, or if you look outside the power sports industry, most people just kind of go to their job and it's, you know, they do what they do and they clock out and go home. You've kind of got a whole, you know, different look on this, right? It's like, hey, you're really trying to go after the family aspect of it and be interested in their lives and be flexible to what their needs are, not just the job that they're doing. That's wonderful.
Well, I can't say that I learned it all the easy way. You know, it's all trial by fire. You know, we've lost some critical employees because we weren't paying attention to their needs. There's also something I talked about in, and it's probably going to be in the next topic, but I'll go ahead and bring it up now, is, you know, I'm old, you know, and my demographic, you just worked hard until your eyes bled. I mean, you really got in there and you just worked harder than everyone else. And that's how you get to the top. And that's really probably how I ended up in my position. But then you've got to sustain that, right? And so I stayed frustrated at the younger demographic coming into our industry because I just was like, they just don't get it. They don't have any work ethic, so on and so forth. So think of 10,000 excuses, and I was frustrated with all that. Then I realized that the problem wasn't them. The problem was me, that I hadn't adapted to change to the millennial generation and that I needed to learn their love language. What do they speak, right? So what is it that they need that I need to provide? And it really gave me a different look. And that kind of goes into probably the next, you know, topic was inclusion. Number
inclusion.
Six.
Yep.
Right. You know, I call myself an OG, right? Because 31 years of doing this, you know, I'm an OG now. But, you know, we really need to include everyone. And it's so important. Inclusion was not important in my demographic, but it's especially important now. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a need for social media. Everyone wants to put their posts out there, and then they want the feedback of the likes or the hearts or whatever platform you're on, right? That's a need for inclusion. But also a need for an inclusion could be just stopping and saying, hey, did you get to go fishing this weekend like you planned? Now I've remembered them and I've included them in my thoughts, right? It can also be that we're going to, you know, I bring back swag from an event and we bring back enough to make sure everybody has something. It means we remember their birthdays. But it's really something that I think that each employee just feels special because they are special. And that's something new that I had to learn again the hard way.
So I want to touch on this one just a little bit more, because I myself struggle with this, and I know maybe some other operators or managers out there also struggle with just trying to be more personable to maybe some people that they don't know well that are on the staff. And so, like, what is your, I mean, other than just being brilliant and memorizing, you know, outside of that, how would a GM go, you know what, I don't really know this person. My parts manager hired him about a week ago. You know, they work in the back. They're rarely up front where I am. I mean, how do you suggest some of these operators be more inclusive in their lives to get to know them more so that they can ask questions? Hey, did you go fishing this past weekend?
This is a great question. And I'm going to be honest and tell it myself.
Okay.
I'm a high D personality. And if you don't know the DISC personality profile, I'm going to tell you I'm the highest D we have here, which means I have a dominant, direct, no nonsense, black and white personality. It's exhausting for me to be an I or an S, which is an interactive socializer, you know, steady relator. That's not my wheelhouse. That is not my superpower. My superpower is, you know, delivering, you know, a message and just being direct with it. And so I have had to really reach inside myself and learn and adapt to this. And I read a lot of books and I still listen to podcasts on, you know, learning how to ask questions. There's some great books out there that can teach you, if you don't have that skill set, how to, you know, socialize and interact with people and get the most out of them. But it doesn't take much. Let's go back to the little things. It takes very little. It takes just a tiny bit of interest. So for me personally, every day I get here early and I roll all the vehicles out with the team. So motorcycles, side-by-sides, everything gets moved out. It's the first 45 minutes of our day. I'm engaging at that time. That's the time to be social. We're telling jokes or we're smiling. Not everyone's smiling in the morning, so you got to know some people just want to be left alone. And in the evening, we reverse that. So we bring everything back in, and I participate in that. And during that time, it's a very relaxed environment. But what we also do is ask the questions. So who, what, why, where, when? You know, I have to repeat that to myself on a loop. Because as a D, I just want to direct a delivery and say, hey, did you get this done? That's right. Not a good question. So we have to stop and bring the personal part of it first. So I have to pause myself and say, hey, how are you today? Really, you look a little down. Are you okay? And that's something that I think that as direct GMs, there's a lot of GMs that do a so much a better job than myself, for sure. But if you're not just organically that way, I think it's just good to stop and grow.
If you're a motorcycle and power sports dealer, you already know the biggest marketplace websites are clunky, slow, and riddled with ads. Even if you pay big bucks to list your inventory, your competitors can pay even more to outrank you. That's why we created MotoHunt. Our site is famously streamlined and quick, with no extra nonsense to confuse buyers or dealers. That's why we rank so high in search results without having to spend millions in advertising. Why pay three times as much? At MotoHunt, one low price covers everything a dealer needs to get their inventory listed and collecting leads fast, with no multi-level pricing tiers and no way for your competition to out-premium you. No matter how many listings or leads you generate, your subscription price is the same. Click the link to find out how MotoHunt can help you start generating more leads today.
I'm going to try that. Who, what, why, where, when, and just keep that on a loop when I'm interacting with people.
Yeah.
I'm gonna steal that one from you, AJ.
Okay, perfect.
Okay. So let's keep going with the list here, because I know you're very busy. You're running a dealership, and you got a lot of great staff that you got to ask who, why, what, where, when. But let's go to number seven, training. Obviously, probably the biggest topic from my perspective on this whole list that you got here, outside of just hiring the individual. But tell us a little bit about your training program, some of the ones that you've seen, good, bad, indifferent, and how they kind of help with the overall goal of the store.
So training is something that's really challenging to do in our environment. You know, it's not like we have like a training class specifically for each individual job track, right? And identifying each person's needs and what they're going to be best at. What we do, obviously, everyone goes through OEM training. The OEMs do a great job of sending us out video content to learn product, or even sometimes sales content or service training. So the idea is that every person has to do the training, even cybersecurity, because that's a new risk that we are all, you know, forced to be trained on.
Yep.
But every person is held accountable to have their training complete. And outside of that, though, which because that's something that everyone can do, we dedicate a critical team member in each department that we call basically the lead, you know, so the sales lead or the parts lead or the service lead. And that person, or in the case of the technicians, that would be a shop foreman. That person's role is to, and this helps them feel included, right? So we're going back to inclusion. That person's role is to help kind of be the big brother or sister of that department and make sure that the new hire has somebody to go to directly. So they're more likely to interact and tell something, like they're more likely to act like they don't know something to someone that's their peer rather than leadership, because they don't want to look like they don't know what they're doing. So it gives them kind of that soft landing, so to speak. But it also helps make that team lead feel included and like they're a part of the process. And it helps train, so they get to mentor that person and that person gets to shadow them, so to speak. And that's really, I mean, how did we all learn to do this 30 years ago? I can tell you, on the job training, OJT, right? That's what we did. We got thrown into it and we figured it out. But we have the newer, younger generation that doesn't do as well in that environment, right? That trial by fire is not their wheelhouse. They need more of that mentorship. And so that kind of helps everyone in the team finish the loop.
I love that. The shadowing part is huge, because you have to learn the location, kind of the culture, here's where things are. But do you have any type of actual curriculum or video series or paperwork or a binder that you have them go through, and it's kind of on a formatted basis like that?
So I've seen that done, and I think it's great. Our approach has been a little bit more hands-on. I have learned this, that when I have given someone text, and we have an employee manual and those things, don't get me wrong, because we're a stickler on processes. However, when I've asked someone, you ask for that time off, and that's during the time off that we don't normally allow for, you know, vacations, what was your thought process? Well, they didn't read the manual, you know, they didn't read the content. So that for us, I don't feel like would be as useful, because if you ask someone if they enjoy reading and do they comprehend it well, most of our general staff do not. They're not, their reading comprehension skills are not great. Salespeople, especially, right? They're, you know, now our techs maybe, you know, they're more of that analytical brain. So for us, that is not part of our process, because I don't feel like it would be as useful in our dealership with the way we train.
I'll share with you, and maybe you can share with me, but many, many moons ago when I first got started in this business, remember the old Lemco videos that were around on VHS, mind you, my first week was basically go to this back room here. I'm going to pop it, the sales manager, I'm going to pop in the tape for you. Sit here, watch this video, here's a notepad, take some notes, and come get me when you're done.
Yeah.
Right. So clearly things have changed a lot since then. Yeah. But what was your first training experience when you entered this business?
There was none.
Swim with the sharks, right?
Yes. I went to an F&I school, but I was so new that it was like absolutely mind blowing to me. I didn't even know what Credit Life was, you know. So back then we sold Credit Life, Accident and Health. And so, you know, obviously I really didn't learn, because I really didn't know what I was doing to begin with. You know, I didn't come from this industry when I started in F&I. So I think that, again, some people do well in trial by fire, right? We're just going to go out there and we're going to figure it out. And really, though, are we doing our best job to get that employee comfortable so that they can be on their own soon by just throwing them in the deep end. No, we don't. I mean, that's not how you teach a child to swim. And so we really come along and just have them have a buddy system, so to speak. It's just worked for us.
That's great. That's great that you're able to kind of pair them up with the individual, the captain of that team, if you will, and they get that face time with that individual. How long does that usually last?
So we do a 60-day. Now they're allowed to, do things on their own depending on how quickly they adapt. But we're going to give them a 60-day cushion for pay to make sure that they are comfortable and learn the job instead of being anxious about if they're going to make enough money. That way, and then as needed, we've had, 90-day extent, where we've extended it to 90 days, just depending on the growth of that person. Everyone learns at a different pace. Certainly, they're all individuals, but I feel like if we don't give them some window to, succeed, they may be focusing on the wrong things instead of learning.
Totally get it. Okay, so let's go with number eight here. Now we're to hiring. So this is kind of the starting line, if you will, right? It all starts at the hire. How do you filter the best individuals, that are looking to be a passionate, inclusive person, enthusiast in the business to do said job? How do you go through that hiring process at your store?
So, I want to start with we're pretty blessed that we're in a metroplex. So, we have, a bigger pond to fish out of, so to speak. But really, we have such a good team that we usually get people that refer people to us. Like, hey, we're hiring. We put it on our social media, things like that. We do have Indeed. So, we're like everyone else. I will filter through, the resumes on Indeed as well. It's my least favorite part of my job, honestly, is hiring, because it can be very taxing to, it's like speed dating almost, nobody wants to do that. But, and it's uncomfortable for, the person coming in for the interview too. So it goes both ways. It's very distracting from the job. So, but starting with getting some good resumes in. So if you have to pull from another source, I also think that hiring a recruiter, if you do have a hard time drawing from, let's say you're in a smaller area, like there are some people in our 20 group that are 100 miles away from the next real big town, right? And so you're going to need to pay someone. The more you pay up front, the less you pay in the long run, truly. I believe in that. But then once you get that new hire in, we do a two-phase interview. So the dealer principal and myself both interview. We both have very different interview styles, and we both have very different feedback on the way that we view each employee. We rarely ever agree on the strengths and weaknesses of an employee. But the end result is they've gone through the yin and the yang, so to speak. So the two polar opposites of the way that we lead. And if they make that cut, that's usually a pretty good sign. After doing this for this many years, he's been doing it for over 50 years, and obviously me over 30. So I think that we're pretty good judge of character.
Absolutely.
But I've had some professional interviewers before that tricked me. So the next step would be give them an assessment. Pay the $100 or however much it costs to give them an assessment, and let that kind of weed it out, and then listen to that assessment. So let's just say you went by your gut. Okay, I really like this guy. Like I really like him. And then we give him the assessment, and it's almost like truth serum, right? Well, the assessment's gonna tell us, well, this employee is actually not telling you the truth. You have to listen to that, even if you like someone. And so that's kind of our method for hiring. It's been good. I on average, I say this, last year I mailed out 2 W-2s, which means everyone else's I handed to them. We have people that are retiring this year here. So that
Wow.
retention, that's obviously going to be the next thing that we talk about. But hiring is critical, making sure that you don't just panic hire. A lot of times we'll lose a couple of employees and we're in a rush. You can't rush. You have to slow down. There's too many ways for someone for that to cost you a lot of money, like a
For sure.
discrimination lawsuit or something like that. So a panic hire is usually going to be end up in a panic fire. And the key is to take your time.
I like that. Panic hires lead to panic fires. Couple questions on that. So you mentioned that most of your applicants are coming in via referral or from your organic social media. But when you do go the Indeed route, and I'm sure you've faced this with Every time you go through Indeed or some type of mass job posting, you get hundreds of applicants because people are just trying to fire off as many resumes. Can you first tell me how you filter, you know, the 100, the 200 resumes that you get, first of all, and then before you bring them in for the two-phase interview, are you having a phone conversation with them first?
100% of the time.
Okay.
Yeah, 100% of the time. So the key for me is that we need to make sure that when we're going through Indeed, that we set all of the parameters to try to weed out just the people that are going to be generic, dropping their resumes in. So there's a way to do that in Indeed. And if someone's on Indeed and they want to do that, they can talk to someone at Indeed to help them with that process. So that's out there for them. But I like to give them one of the skills tests. Okay. And then I have a set of requirements that are required for them to be eligible. You know, so those are answers. Those are questions that they have to answer before their resume can slip through. If they bypass the skills test or one of the tests, they're automatically out. I know that there's a lot of dealers that are more hungry for employees than we are, and they have to spend the time going through every one of those 100, you know, resumes. I don't have to do that usually. Fortunately, we don't end up needing to hire a lot of people in the course of a year. But then as I go through that, I'm looking first for, you know, experience in something. So if they are hiring for sales and they've never done a sales job in their life, let's just say that they did customer service at, you know, a widget factory. But I have 10 people that have seasoned sales experience. I'm going to pick on those people first. You know, I'm going to want to choose those people. Yeah. And that really helps me weed that out. And I'll just send the polite rejection letter on those others so that I can keep that inbox clean. Yep. We start with a phone interview. I can tell you that's really, like, if I call somebody and they've applied for sales.
And they can't talk.
And they're like, yeah, automatic veto. No way.
Right.
Like that, you're going to give my customers that. No way, shape, or form. That's not professional. You know, you have no idea who you're talking to. You know, I'm a grown woman and you're, you know, I could have given birth to you twice, you know, so that's not going to be the reception that our clients are going to want to hear either. So those are going to be automatic no's for me. And that's worked well for us. So we start with our gut. So phone interview goes great. I want to see you face to face. You know, we have an appearance code. You know, we're in a pretty nice area in our county. And, you know, our clients expect to see that when they walk in. Professional, clean cut. So we have an appearance code. You know, they can't have, you know, tattoos up their face and neck and, you know, things like that. That's against our appearance code. They'd have to cover that up. And we really, you know, stick to that. And so, you know, we tell people that up front, though. You know, this is kind of what we're expecting. But also too, when you're dealing with someone face to face, it can really change their personality, right? And they may do great on the phone and then really not do well in person. You know, we're looking for confidence also, because confident people, and then they get that in that couple of interview process. You know, maybe they were nervous up front, but then they got their confidence on the second one. That's okay. You know, we're all nervous, right? But really paying attention to the small things that, you know, body language and things that we see.
It's huge. It's huge, especially in a business like ours that's so personable, right? Last question on that one last note. You said you give them an assessment. So we've got the job posting with very tight parameters to make it through to your desk. You filter those. You do the phone interview. If you like them, you get them in to a two-phase interview in person, one with you, one with the owner. And then you give them, you said $100 or a paid-for assessment test. What are some of the ones that you prefer for that?
So we have a couple of people that do that, that we can refer to, and I can put that in a LinkedIn or whatever, but we've got a couple of people that it depends on what job that they need. I think for me personally, because I'm a high D personality, I'm so analytical that I just need to know what their DISC personality is. Like if we have somebody that's a high D, they're going to have a harder time being a salesperson, right?
Yeah.
If we have somebody that's a high C, they're going to have a harder time being a salesperson, because the high C is going to be great at paperwork and not great at people skills. No offense, because I'm a second to my C, oh, D, I'm a C, but you know, their people skills are going to be tougher for them to, that doesn't mean they can't do it. It just means it's going to be not an organic thing for them to do.
Right.
So that's first. Our 20 group, they do DISC personality profiles, but there are different avenues that they can do that. There's I can't think of the name on right now, but I've got a couple of different people that offer that type of assessment.
Okay,
That
yeah.
I could get that assessment, just send the employee to that assessment to get that third pass on, is this employee really set for this job, right? Are they the right person?
Makes sense. You're spending a little bit of time and energy to make sure that that quality applicant makes it through all these things. Okay, so now we're at that point, right? Now they passed all these parameters. We feel good about them. They're hired. We're 30, 60, 90. We're 1 year into the job. Let's talk about topic number 9, and that's retention.
Right.
How do you, and some of the things that you've talked about on this list, how do you go about keeping employees, especially in a day and age? And we talked about some of these where they're wanting to be more inclusive.
Yes.
They want more balance between their work home life.
Yes.
Everybody seems to be asking for more pay. Inflation's, you know, kind of bananas right now. How do you keep these employees engaged, happy, and coming to the job every single day?
So that's really been probably the one thing that we have going for us that's rock solid. And that retention is the critical thing. If you don't have retention, you're wasting your money, you're wasting your time, you're spinning your wheels, you're always stressed out, you've always got turnover. And I mean, we have turnover. We'll lose a couple of employees and rehire a couple of employees a year. So it happens everywhere for different reasons. But the idea is that you need to give people more of a reason to come to work than a paycheck. That starts it. Because let's hit their high notes. So we all the way back to Honda Maps, you know, there was like this questionnaire, A, B, C, D, E, F. What's your number one, number two, number three? And what we found is people put more value in working for someone that's fair and honest and being a part of a team than they put money. So money could be their C, but they've been mistreated somewhere else, or they've wanted to feel like they're part of something greater. And so really, if we ask the employees, what is your A, what's your B, what's your C, we found that 90% of the time, money is not their A, 90% of the time. And so if you identify what that is and you focus on trying to make sure you meet that need, you know, we stop talking about money. Certainly people need to make a paycheck. And so a fair, honest wage is really important. And that's going to vary. You know, you can't judge yourself, you know, in your 20 group by what everyone else is paying. What's it going to cost them to live? Our city, you know, the cost of a mortgage is incredibly high now. In the last 5 years, it has, you know, literally almost doubled. And I'm not exaggerating.
Yep.
And so a cost of an apartment is almost not affordable. And so you have to make sure you're paying, certainly. But then what else are you doing to feed that employee's love language? And I get picked on a lot because I use the term love language. But let's face it, if we use the term, you know, love language when we're talking about, you know, our marriage or our partnerships,
yep.
You know, are we speaking our partner's language to make them feel cared about? If we use that with our employees too, are we speaking their language to make them feel cared about? We should be. We're spending that much time with these employees, right? That's an important part of wanting to stay somewhere, is feeling like your needs are being met. And so if we take the human equation into account here, I really feel like it's probably one of the more overlooked things. People will want to come to work for that. They don't necessarily want to come to work to make a paycheck. And so for us, it's just trying to meet those needs of, you know, each individual to retain them. Again, you know, you've got one guy that, you know, really wants to, he's got kids and they're in ball games. And maybe you give him every 5 weeks they can have a Saturday off. You know, Saturdays are hard. So that's a luxury,
right.
You know, but feeding each person by what their needs are and giving them a reason to come to work.
And I'm assuming that you have some benefits, you have retirement, you have all
for sure. Yeah,
the great packages. Okay.
Yeah, we have the great packages. Something we added this past year was we have something called Fresh Bennies. It's a health, they can get telemed. So we have a lot of employees that opt out of medical, and we pay for half of medical, but they don't have to opt in our state. So they don't want to pay for that medical benefit, but we have telemed. So if they get a cold or they get a rash or they get poison ivy or something, they can get medicine for that. We also have mental health now, so they can talk to a counselor. That's a new thing that came across after COVID. We had a lot of changes in people's mental health after things happened to COVID. So we did change that to add that. And then we have life insurance for each employee that paid for it.
Love it. What about, I'm assuming like you and I, we're enthusiasts before we're business people in power sports. I'm assuming that most of your staff is also an enthusiast. Do you guys put together any type of staff rides or events revolving around the products?
Yes, we do. Actually, I've got it on my calendar today to put a ride night together. So we'll service up all the bikes and we take a little ride out. I encourage people to go live their life and enjoy their life. I hold people accountable to that. Hey, you know, I know you left fishing. Did you go fishing this weekend? Hey, did you get your workout in today? I love that accountability because when people are feeling good outside of work, they're feeling good at work, you know, when they're feeling refreshed when they come in. So I like to really encourage people to do that. But we do things as a team. We've done kind of company trips together where we've rented a cabin, you know, and taken everyone that's wanted to participate, group rides where we've gone over the weekend on motorcycles. So, yeah, we try to do that, too.
That's super cool. I love that. Yeah. I think it's also a perfect segue to our final point here, number 10. Everyone is different. You were just discussing how, you know, hey, this guy likes to work out. This guy likes to go fishing. This guy may have kids. This guy doesn't have any kids. Mm-hmm. You know, this person has this or that. So tell us a little bit about your mindset on how every employee is different and kind of how you can build a plan around that individual to hit all of these points, retention, hiring, all those things.
Yeah, that last one was don't sweat the small stuff because it's really true. And I have been critical of that before. But nobody enjoys being micromanaged, right? If you ask any person, do you like to be micromanaged or do you like to be given a job and a list of things you need to get done and just get it done? Your people that you really desire to work for you are going to be natural kind of internal leaders themselves. They're going to want to be given the job and they want to know, you know, that you trust them to do that job. So what I learned was that we may have, you know, half the staff that gets up early in the morning and they're just a live wire, like myself. You know, I wake up and, you know, I've already had 1,000 words before my first cup of coffee. but then you have those guys that want to, you know, they're barely on time, you know, but they're also the guys that are going to stay late. So, you know, we have to kind of, you know, ebb and flow, like what's this person's strength? What's this person's weaknesses? And play on that, empower them to go with whatever their superpower is. And I think that, just keeping an idea that we want to, you know, focus on what their attributes are. What's the big thing? So if they're still employed, we've got to take a list and write down what are the things that they bring that are great to the establishment. And then look at the things that are not so good. Can you mentor those? Like, can you say, hey, how do you feel about trying to be here 5 minutes earlier if late is their problem? You know, and get their buy-in. Ask them, how do you feel about that? Do you think you could do that? If it's someone that is, you know, struggling in an area, just try to help walk alongside them, give good leadership and kind of mentor them through that part of their issues. And, really that's just kind of the big thing is look at it from a bird's eye view. Don't nitpick the small things.
Yeah. So rather than being a finger wag, hey, you're late, you need to do this, you need to do that. You're more or less in the coaching aspect of it, like, hey, let's work on this together. What can I do? What can you do? Let's work on this, right? We got a little problem. Let's solve it, right?
So I love that you said that. That goes to the parent, the adult, and the child ego states. And
yes,
it's something that I used to be a firearms instructor, and I think that we have to learn that when you're wagging that finger, you are the parent, and people don't receive that well. They're going to revert to childlike state, and the last thing we want is a bunch of children working for us. If we can use terms like we and us terminology and really kind of be a team, that is really critical. And I think that will solve a lot of conflict resolution problems.
That right there is some of the first things I had to learn in a management role is it's not so much using the I and you, it's the we and our, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Well, AJ, we've gone through the whole list of 10 options on your article here from Motorcycle Power Sports News and what you had talked about in the AIM Expo earlier this month. So we will have this link on our show notes for this episode for everybody that's listening. We're hitting the rev limiter here on time. So what I want to do with you is, number one, thank you very much for going through this with me. Very inspirational, very informative. And I hope that everybody listening finds some value out of it. I want to do another episode with you because I got like 100 more questions about all this stuff and more of your deep experience within the industry. So we'll have to plan another show for that. But for everybody listening, make sure to check out the show notes. AJ's on LinkedIn. We've got her website, her email, and the link to this, like I said, in the show notes. So feel free to reach out to her if you got any other questions about it. And let's go ahead and end it on this, and we'll look forward to meeting with you again. And just thank you again, AJ.
Thank you so much, Jacob.
All right. And for everybody else, thank you. Like, subscribe, all that stuff. Make sure to share this if you found some value out of it. And let's get some more people on the podcast. So we'll see everybody. Bye.